The name is Ajay Locascio, a.k.a. Gambit. Remember it. And you're listening to the special episode of Power of X-Men. Hope you survive the experience, mon ami.
What's up, familia? Dayspring here with an episode review of X-Men 97, episode 9, our penultimate episode, Tolerance is Extinction, part 2. What do you want me to say? What is it that you want me to say, familia? This is perfect. This is a perfect adaptation of the X-Men. I am so happy we live in a world with X-Men 97 in it. From the writing, to the voice talent, to the animation, to the style choices. I mean, listen, we're going to nitpick a couple of things in this episode. Because, you know, some things I did kind of flag. I'm like, okay, I would have done this differently. But they are so minor. You know what I mean? They're so minor. And I really want to start off this episode by saying, in Bo DeMaio, we trust. Bo has delivered a fantastic series. Everyone is waking up early to watch these episodes. It's trending. We are all united. All of us X-Men fans are united with so much love for X-Men 97. That does not mean there are people out there that do not like it. I see those comments. They come in, to which I always say, I'm like, it's okay not to like something. It is okay to disagree and not like something, right? But people do get kind of nasty about it. I mean, I'm sure I've gotten nasty about it in the past. Especially from the years of 2003 through 2018, where our God Queen was dead editorially. So trust me, on the Shades of Grey message board back in like 2005, you did not want to encounter Dayspring. But X-Men 97, I think, regardless of how one feels about it, it has landed with general audiences, and it is trending, and it is doing the thing it has to do. And I mentioned this last week, or in the Gail Simone episode, I'm forgetting which episode I mentioned it, but just because it hasn't hit the Nielsen top 10 charts does not mean anything. Again, I think it's managing expectations, which is, would the original series have hit the Nielsen charts? Does it even matter in an era of streaming that X-Men 97 has to hit the Nielsen charts because this is evergreen content for Disney Plus going forward? I was about to say Disney 97. It might as well be called Disney 97. But I think what X-Men 97 has done, even if it comes out that these are the worst ratings that Marvel Disney has ever seen, this has been such a wonderful publicity facelift for Marvel. It has restored faith with hardcore Marvel fans in the MCU and what Marvel is putting out there. I mean, we have been living in an age of Quantumania. I'm sorry to say. I thought The Marvels was a great movie. You know, we love The Marvels here, but The Marvels did not get general audiences excited. It did not. And I was talking about this with Rod and Essex on Free Comic Book Day. And I was so shocked that so many people did not turn out to see The Marvels, especially since it set up the X-Men in the MCU. And The Marvels had the lowest box office gross of any Marvel movie. I mean, it was not deserving of that. It was not that bad of a movie. But regardless of how I feel about it personally, it did not land with general audiences. And it had Beast in it, and it set up the X-Men. I mean, that was pretty major. That was pretty major, and no one showed up for it. So the fact that people are waking up now at 3 a.m. or midnight, 3 a.m. for those of us on the East Coast, to watch X-Men 97 and to see that trending on Twitter already, or X, whatever it's called, and it's 9 a.m. as of this recording. Yes, I went back to sleep after I watched the episode. Familia, I am burnt. I am in back-to-back gigs. I'm on the road. I have to go back to D.C. again this weekend for another gig. I love my job very much. I'm so happy with my day job, but I am physically okay, I'm waking up, I'm watching this funk out again. But we are going to discuss spoilers and some news items in this episode. So if you don't want any spoilers for episode 9, Tolerance is Extinction, part 2, this is your chance to tap out. But we are going to be talking about some news items before we get into the episodes and stuff that I just kind of like really wanted to tackle really quickly. And one of them are some of the new X-Men titles that we are getting, specifically X-Factor by Mark Russell and Bob Quinn, which is coming this August. And it's a cover by Greg Land. And we have the classic X-Factor logo, which I love that. Which, sidebar, it's so funny. I was posting an image, and if you guys engage with us on the Instagram, I'd love to post, like, a character and maybe, like, a logo or something like that. And I had Polaris, and I couldn't find a Polaris logo because Polaris has never had a solo issue. She doesn't have her own Marvel logo, so I just put the X-Factor logo. And the amount of comments and the amount of DMs being like, you got Polaris's name wrong. Oh, Polaris is called X-Factor. I was like, no, I'm just, that's like the next best thing to put for Polaris. I think it was for my Deadpool post of which characters I want to see, you know, return for Deadpool and Wolverine. But I was just like, oh my God, I used to be able to get away with that stuff a couple years ago. No one would ever notice that. I've been using Polaris and the X-Factor logo for about 3 years now. And now all of a sudden, like, the amount of DMs and anger about it. But it's fine. Anyways, that's a long-winded way of saying that I love that X-Factor logo. And the team consists of Angel, Frenzy, Havoc, Pyral, and Feral. Now, this on paper is a really nice group of characters. I have no qualms with any of these characters. I love all of these characters so much. I think Frenzy in Sword and Age of X was a fantastic character. I loved her so much there. And I love her that complicated relationship she had with Cyclops. I love her being an ambassador in Sword. It's a character I think has so much potential, especially given her history as a Magneto's acolyte. Havoc, I'm going to tell you something about Havoc. I'm sort of confused with the status of a one Alex Summers, because the last time I followed Havoc so incredibly close was, well, Hellions. Okay, fine, Hellions. But I was going to say before that was his Uncanny Avengers run, and how during Access he got extra, he got reversed, right? He became a bad guy, and then half of his face was like burnt off. And I get it, like in the Age of Resurrection in Krakoa, they just resurrected him with a new body, or they somehow magically healed him. But his character development for me has been so wayward since Uncanny Avengers, specifically that Axis crossover, that I don't really know if I should be excited for him being in a book. Last time we saw him, he was with Maddie at the Limbo embassy in New York. So I'm just curious what he's doing now leading X-Factor. Well, I guess Angel's leading X-Factor because he's the center of this image. But let's see. Pyro still has his face tattoo. I like Pyro. Put him on X-Factor. Let's see him do what he does best. And then Feral. Now, I would have swapped out Feral for Forge here, and I would put Feral in X-Force. That is me being a classic, you know, X-Men fan, that I just like certain characters, certain places. Like, Forge does not work for X-Force to me. For me, X-Force does the missions that no one else can do. So the fact that he's in X-Force, I'm like, Forge, I mean, I get it. During Ghost Boxes, he had an interesting character development, right? The Warren Ellis Astonishing X-Men run. But I just don't see him as part of X-Force. And Feral, I think, belongs in X-Force. I think she will do what needs to be done. Forge, to me, very brilliant, but also very good with PR. That's sort of where I see Forge. Angel, I'm happy to see Angel front and center. I think Angel is another character. Angel and Havoc, both those characters in particular, I think have suffered in recent years because there just hasn't been too much consistency with them, right? So with Warren after the Death Seed arc in Uncanny X-Force, Uncanny Avengers, Uncanny X-Force, both Rick Remender stories, I feel he's been a little all over the place. And we have the all-new X-Men era that Bendis wrote, and we had Teen Angels sort of ask those questions but never really getting a resolution. And then in Krakoa, he was just fine. He was completely 100% whole. I want to see that bridge on how he became whole again, because it was such a major story. I mean, the Dark Angel saga was a big story for X-Men fans back in the day. We loved it. Some people, I remember on the message boards, were calling it our generation's Dark Phoenix saga. I think that was a little hyperbolic, to be very honest with you, but it's fine. Like, the story was that good when it was published at that time. I'm curious if anyone has revisited it. I haven't revisited it. I have the trades back in our place in Miami, but I haven't taken a look at the Dark Angel saga. I liked it very much as it was being published, and I enjoyed it, and I thought it was really smart, good writing that had a really nice payoff, especially that last scene with him and Psylocke. But I'm curious if it has really withstand the test of time, and if new readers that came in during the Krakoan era, if they've gone back and they've read the Dark Angel saga, because I think, you know, if you like Warren, that's definitely a story you wanna check out. But there's something about this that just feels lackluster. And again, it's not the creatives, it's not the team, but it's just something overall that I'm not excited for. And you know, I said something on Instagram. I was like, TBH, I thought this was a joke in reference to the cover that was released. Some like mean DMs about it. And I think it's always really important to remember, and I always say this, that it's okay if you don't like something, right? And it's okay if you like something that nobody likes. I think the key is just to have like conversations. And was I being a little facetious with my caption being like, TBH, I thought this was a joke? Yes, I was. I followed it up by saying, like, what does everyone think? I have an open heart. But I got like a really nasty message, and I was just like, whoa. So, you know, I just want to clarify, it's not the creatives, it's not the characters. I certainly like Warren. I'm going on the record here that I love Warren. And I love Havoc, and I love Frenzy, and I love Pyro, and I love Feral. But there's something about the positioning that it's not landing with me. And I don't know if maybe I've just been jaded over the last few years with the books and everything going on. And maybe X-Men 97 is just so good. I'll tell you, I read X-Men Forever number 3 today, and I was just not impressed. I was like, I want my money back. I want my, it wasn't $4.99. It was like $3.49 with my Comixology discount. But I was like, I want my money back. This was not good. Like, why am I paying for this issue? The $3.49, I would say, is my cup of coffee, but my coffee this morning was like $5. Inflation, people. But I'm really not vibing with the X books. And, you know, I took a lot of flack for that these last few years. I had people, you know, messaging me being like, you know, I listen to your podcast, it doesn't really give me fan. Or like, why do you even do a podcast if you don't like the X books and or you don't like the X-Men? I'm like, I love the X-Men. If I am being critical and giving feedback, it's because I think we are deserving of quality and not half-baked storylines. And Krakoa is going out on a whimper. I don't think Krakoa should go away. It's such a wonderful, wonderful setting for the X-Men. And again, I don't like that X-Men 97 is informing the books, because the original X-Men animated series was a reaction to Jim Lee's X-Men era that was leading the charge. A lot of the stories that we saw in there were based off of X-Men stories. And that's true for X-Men 97, don't get me wrong. But the fact that now the books are going to go back towards more of a 90s feel, and I am a fan. Listen, I prefer the X-Men in the Mansion. I prefer the X-Men in the Mansion. But again, as I always say, my preference does not dictate the franchise. And I think it's such a misstep for the franchise to leave Krakoa. I think you just needed to go back and do some more world building with Krakoa. A lot of these titles that we're getting here, I'm not vibing with them. And, you know, one of the things Tom Brevoort, another news item, Tom Brevoort said in his Substack that we were going to get a major crossover for the X books come October 2025. And I don't know why the first thing that came to my mind was Battle of the Atom. That crossover we got back in 2013, right, to celebrate the X-Men's anniversary. it was fine when it was published. It was a nice read. Nice being the operative word. I'm not going to like tear it apart, but it's not memorable. I don't see anyone being like, oh, we need to go revisit Battle of the Atom. And there were really great moments in that too. But that was the first thing that came to my mind. I was like, okay, we have this new era of X-Books. You're going to do a crossover in about a year and a half. So not October 24, not October 2024, which would be this year. We're talking October 2025. So about a year and a half-ish. And again, the first thing that came to my mind was Battle of the Atom. I'm like, there is no momentum. There is no excitement going into this new era of X-Men. And it's really sad. It's really disheartening because Krakoa brought the X-Men back. House of X, Jonathan Hickman. We have this whole new generation of X-Men fans because of the Krakoan era. Again, I wasn't a big fan of a lot of the books. Something else someone told me, they were like, just because it didn't land with you doesn't mean it's bad. I'm like, I know. I don't know how many times I have to keep repeating myself. I know that it didn't land with me, but that my personal subjective taste does not speak for all of fandom. It does not speak for what is going right in the X-Men franchise. Again, if I had my preference, the X-Men would be in the mansion battling the Phalanx and Onslaught would be brewing in the background. That would be my personal preference. However, I acknowledge that that is not where you need to take the franchise, and that Krakoa and some of these books were needed to revitalize readers. And that's okay to not like something, but still think it's good. Anyways, sorry. That's my rant. It's 9 a.m. and I'm on my first cup of coffee. So get ready. We're going to be ranting. But I really do hope that this crossover is logical. When I think about what kind of crossover they could be doing based off of the preview that we got for Gail Simone's Uncanny X-Men, I don't know. You know, this new villain that's taken up in the X-Men mansion just seems like a substitute Orcus. It's exactly what it is. It's just another Dr. Ellis and Philip with his cane. They just seem stand-ins for, I'm forgetting the doctor in Orcus and Nimrod. That Nimrod's scientist wife and Nimrod. That they just feel like substitutes for that. So, you know, with Battle of the Atom, I remember so clearly thinking that, like, okay, when this crossover was initially announced, they're going to have to address the X-Men, the time-displaced X-Men, the 05. And that seemed like a logical step for the crossover. I don't know what they're going to be doing here. I guess maybe a year from now we can start speculating, because I think a year from now we still won't have solicitations on for October. But, you know, we will speculate as we get more information. But if I had to put my finger on it based off of the titles we've seen and sort of what plots were seeded in the Gail Simone Uncanny X-Men, I will say that perhaps it's going to have all the different teams, Exceptional X-Men, Uncanny X-Men, X-Factor, coming together to really solve this mutant crisis post-Krakoa, where the X-Men are once again underground and disassembled or not organized, and a big cosmic threat coming, which would be, you know, seated in the Phoenix book. So that's sort of what I would think is happening. I'm curious to know what you guys think or what you guys want out of a crossover for this new era of X-Men books. We're not even done with Fall of X. We're not even done with the Krakoan era. And we're already getting a tease for a crossover in a year and a half. I mean, that's just the way the comic book industry is now. I miss the days where you didn't know what was going to happen next. When you just go into Publix, which was my supermarket growing up, and you go to the spinner rack and you just see Age of Apocalypse and you're like, what happened? And you thought that perhaps Age of Apocalypse was the new status quo. And that's it. That was going to be the books going forward. We don't get that anymore with Substack and solicitations and those pesky podcasters on Instagram who report every single news. All of that sort of gets thrown out there. But another piece of news I wanted to address was a tweet Bo DiMaio just put out at midnight. And he responded to a tweet about his work on season 2. And I want to read that, because this is something I've been saying for some time now. And everyone's like, well, X-Men 97 is so good. Well, at least we're going to get a season 2. And Bo worked on it. And I want to read his quote here, which is, I did, in reference to working on season 2. But in season 1, I wrote and also steered creative on the execution of scripts through all production, background, character design, cast recordings, editorial, music, etc. This was actually the bulk of my creative work. This won't be the case in season two. So for example, Emma's "Is that your dress?" to Emma in episode 5 was a line that occurred to me while watching the episode in sound mixing. Originally, Emma said nothing. A lot of what I love about episodes 8 through 9 was found in rewrites, editorials, and scoring. So just because Bo wrote season 2, the work on individual episodes still needed to be completed. And because Bo is a wonderful showrunner, he not only had a map for season 1, season 2, but he conceived an entire series. So a lot of seeds have been planted throughout the season that would have paid off in seasons down the line. So, you know, I am worried for season 2. I think these episodes, let's just enjoy them. Let's just really enjoy them, because I am worried about what we're going to get in the future. I'm happy to be wrong. I really am. But I want to be clear that leadership starts at the top. And I think a lot of the people who've been working on X-Men 97, it's so clear everyone's talented. It really, truly is obvious that everyone's talented, that there's a lot of passion. But you do need someone at the top of the pyramid who is equally as passionate about these characters as the fans are, who understand that these characters have a legacy. And Bo also had said a tweet, like you said something in a tweet, which was like, this is not my interpretation of X-Men. This is making sure that the characters everyone knows and love make it onto the screen, and that these are their characters. This isn't my mark on X-Men. These are just the characters. And I love that. I love that so much. He isn't projecting anything onto these characters. He's telling stories that are logical for these characters. And he understands the mutant metaphor. You can always tell a Bo DeMaio script because of the monologues. They're just so powerful and so beautiful. And he just gets those character moments. All right, Familia, let's dive into this episode of X-Men 97. All right, so it kicks off with Xavier waking up and realizing that his hover chair has been destroyed in the fires that were caused by the Prime Sentinels. And because of Magneto's EMT, is it called EMT? But his magnetic wave around the planet has shut down all the Prime Sentinels. And Bastion is crying because he's holding his mom. It's like, Bastion, come on. What did you think was going to happen to your mom if you turned her into a Prime Sentinel? But he's crying. He puts her in bed and he's here like, Mom, it's finally quiet. And we see Storm and Forge reuniting with Jubilee and Sunspot. Jubilee and Sunspot are being chased down an alleyway, just like in the intro. And I try to see if this was like the case also, that the characters that chase them down the alleyway, is it the same characters that are in this episode? Much like how the humans that are caught in the fight between the Brotherhood and the X-Men in the intro episode are actually the Prime Sentinels that we've seen in these episodes. But no, it doesn't seem to be the case. It seems to be, there is a Friends of Humanity character in the crowd for this episode, but I don't think it's the same one. Oh, but speaking of the intro, not much has changed. One, the humans who are caught in the crossfire are now Prime Sentinels. So the scene where the X-Men and the Brotherhood are about to face off and they smash into each other, the humans that are running away during that confrontation in the opening, they're actually rendered as Prime Sentinels. Very nice detail there, Bo DeMaio. But the big thing is, of course, Storm is back in the opening credits and she is in her goddess outfit, her original giant size look. I call it the goddess now because she truly is a goddess. And this look just epitomizes Storm's power. I love it so much. I love the mohawk. Love the mohawk, but I prefer this look for Storm. So she is in the opening credits. But that's it. Not much else in the opening credits. I was kind of hoping that since we have the Pride of the X-Men costumes returning, that the characters would have been reskinned in these costumes. I was hoping for Sunspot to be in the intro. I was hoping for Jubilee's new costume, her vampire look. I don't think Jubilee's going to be a vampire. They have, you know what would make sense? If Jubilee was somehow infected with a Prime Sentinel, you know, juju. But I don't think we're going to see Vampire Jubilee anytime soon. I said this, by the way, either on a story, I think it was on an NGL, where, you know what? For a one-off episode in X-Men 97, I think they could get away with doing Vampire Jubilee. It is not a very beloved story in the comics. I don't know many people who love Vampire Jubilee. Once more, I'm not saying you don't exist out there, but I'm just saying general audiences, the Vampire Jubilee didn't really land with a lot of folks. And again, it's because that in the mid-aughts, you know, with the Stephanie Meyer Twilight craze, we can assume that is why we got Vampire Jubilee, why our teenage mall rat heroine was turned into a vampire. But I think because they're doing the costume, I wouldn't mind like a one-off, kind of like how we got the Mojo World episode with Jubilee. I wouldn't mind like a one-off, like half an episode of Jubilee being turned into a vampire and the plot resolves itself. I could be down for it, like a Halloween episode. I would be down for it. Like Dracula comes to town, changes Jubilee into a vampire, and by the end, she's back to her normal self. I could get behind that. That I could get behind. Although I don't know if we're going to get any fun celebrations with the X-Men, because this is bleak. I mean, the mansion is in ruins in this episode. Xavier is reunited with the team. And we have this moment between Scott and Jean and Xavier. And Xavier's like, I can't believe you left Magneto, the school. And Xavier's like, well, you know, I just did that because I really wanted you guys, you and Jean, to have a family, to have a child like Nathan, and not feel obligated to take on my legacy. Because you've been doing everything I've said since I was kids. And Cyclops was just so angry. Cyclops is like, I'm out of here. Goodbye. My only criticism about this opening scene and sort of everything that we see here is I really wish we would have had a moment of the X-Men being reunited with Xavier and then being like, oh my God, Xavier is back. Because we got such a wonderful moment of the Shi'ar ship landing and him taking off his helmet and saying, to me, my X-Men. And you're like, oh, stuff is going to go down. But we just pick up here post-reunion. I really would have liked to have seen Jean be like, Xavier, like, you're back. What do you not know what happened with me and Madeline? You know what I mean? I would have liked to have seen sort of that reunion, but I get it. We have to move the plot along. And the reunion that we do get that put the biggest smile on my face, was Jean and Storm reuniting. Oh, their friendship has seriously just been rendered so well here in X-Men 97. If you remember in the original series, Storm says, I love her like a sister, but they don't actually show their sisterly bond. Their sisterly bond is never really shown. It's spoken about, but it's never shown. And right, that's the age-old thing with writing, show, don't tell. And they'd certainly told a lot. I mean, Storm and Rogue felt more like sisters in the original series than Jean and Storm did. Now, I really do believe that relationship, that sisterly relationship. And Allison Seeley Smith, oh my God, just nails it. She just nails it. And Jennifer Hale, perfect Jean. I love Catherine Disher so much. I love Catherine Disher, again, Familia, and I think she is nailing it as Val Cooper. But Jennifer Hale, what a perfect choice for Jean. Understands Jean's softness and strength. And by the way, this entire show is built on interpersonal connections. I remember a couple years ago, someone, I'm forgetting who, it was either an editor or a writer for the comics, was just like, yeah, we're really focusing on the X-Men as an army and sort of assembling. And I was like, listen, that's great. I think it was during the Utopian era this quote came out. But the thing about the X-Men is that they're never going to be an army. They're a group of heroes that are found family, and they have very complicated interpersonal relationships, all of them. And we even see that here with Rogue and Kirk, right? When Rogue takes Magneto's side and when they go to Asteroid M and Rogue opens up the Blackbird and she's here like, oh, Elf. Like, she got it. She knew her stepbrother teleported them out. That was a very cute scene. But also between Magneto and Xavier, where Magneto's like, you're that day at the bar when you were talking to me about a world where mutants and humans coexisted. That was Genosha. You should have seen it. And the humans, they came and they did this massive, massive attack on us. It's complicated. Magneto and Xavier have a complicated relationship. And let me tell you, another complicated relationship, when I heard it, was between Storm and Rogue. When Rogue was like, "Gal, you were gone. You did not see Genosha." Damn. Talk about being angry. Rogue was angry. And Lenore Zan's delivery. Oh, so happy we live in a world where Lenore Zan has returned as Rogue. And by the way, another relationships. Forge and Beast. I love it how they kind of like geeked out together there. Oh, it was so good. So good, Familia. So yeah, so the X-Men have assembled. They want to take on Magneto. They have to. The world's going to end in 12 hours if they don't do something. But Magneto shows up and he's here like, "Listen, we've played by the rules. The humans are always going to come after us. Come join me in Asteroid M." And the ones that do join are Sunspot, which makes perfect sense because Sunspot's like, "My own mother turned me over to Prime Sentinels," and Rogue. And of course, Rogue has lost Remy. Rogue is very upset about that. And she saw what happened to Genosha. Rogue is traumatized. She's become radicalized because she was like, I saw firsthand people dying. And, you know, we talked about Leech in this episode. Magneto mentions Leech. And it was just devastating. He was like, "I saw a young boy look at me with his little eyes and get incinerated." My mouth just dropped. Of course, like, I'm sorry, I would be Team Magneto. I always said this, like, growing up, I was like, "Oh, I'm always an X-Men. I could never be a Brotherhood." But in my older age, yeah, I could definitely see myself being on the Brotherhood side. Magneto was right. It's heartbreaking. It's heartbreaking what the mutants have gone through. Now, listen, this does not justify Magneto's actions. By any means does not justify Magneto's actions of ending the world in 12 hours. And it's like, Xavier's like, "What are you going to do? There's going to be an ice age. You can't do that." And Magneto is like, "Oh, evolution thrives in darkness." I'm like, Magneto, I'm pretty sure once you run out of hot water and you're like, "I need some Starbucks when I wake up," you're going to be singing a different tune. Like, Don't end the world. You know, you can assault, you can have a war on humanity, but ending the world, like literally plunging the world into an ice age, I don't see where anyone can win. But I get it. He's diabolical. He's evil. And on that note, I mean, why were we told by Bothamile to watch Pride of the X-Men? Well, because this plot is very similar to Pride of the X-Men. And it deals with, you know, Magneto wanting to end the world, plummeting it into darkness. And that is exactly what happened in Pride of the X-Men. Magneto wanted to get the Scorpio Comet to have it collide with Earth and create a new ice age. Ah, I can't believe it. And the X-Men have to go confront Magneto on Asteroid M. Similarly here, where Magneto Rav's House of M, Asteroid M, and brings it up into space, and that's where the X-Men go. I mean, even to the X-Jet landing in Asteroid M, it is all a homage to Pride of the X-Men. I was kind of disappointed. That was another thing I was kind of disappointed in. I was hoping Pride of the X-Men was going to be made canon. It still could be made canon. Who knows? But I thought we were legitimately going to get Pride of the X-Men be official canon. And as of right now, there's no evidence to suggest that. But we do get their costumes. We get Cyclops and Wolverine's classic costumes that were showcased in Pride of the X-Men. We've already seen Storm and Nightcrawler, so we've been good on that. And Rogue's costume is her Brotherhood costume. Very fitting because she gets on Magneto's side in this episode. And she also wore that in a Rogue's Tale. Except I think the outlines were black in it, and I just know this, it's such an arbitrary detail, but the lining on the costume is black in the original series, and I know this because I just pulled a photo to post it on Instagram, and in this episode it's white, so it looks a little bit more like the Mike Carey Rogue, especially with the hood, the X-Men Legacy Mike Carey era. But listen, we have new costumes. I'm really happy with it. And on the subject of new costumes, we finally have the Marvel versus Capcom Cable costume. Now, he got that in the comics during the Phalanx Covenant. So obviously that's what came first. And that is the appropriate way of addressing this costume. But For us X-Men fans who grew up in the 90s playing Marvel versus Capcom, that is Cable's iconic look. I was so happy with it. Obviously, there's some differences with it. They adapted it. Like, he doesn't have the yellow Speedos on it. It's fine. It's close enough. It's close enough where I'm happy with it. And, you know, Cable has, speaking of the interpersonal drama, Cable has, you know, baggage with Jean, which I feel it's a little unfair. I do feel his anger towards Jean is a little unfair, but I get it. Madeline, his mom, you know, is dead. He's tried to save her, I believe, number of times, right? It's hinted at that he's here like, no, not, you know, he's like, no, and he has to time slide away. He loves his mom. He tried to save her. So seeing Jean is a reminder of his failures. But I'm like, I think you're being a little too harsh on Jean here. But he has been corrupted by Sinister. So in addition to the techno-organic virus, he put in some Sinister DNA and he turns on Jean and attacks Jean. But I really am curious to see where their storyline is going to go. And I have to tell you, I think Jean in this episode really, really shines. The battle, we finally get her fighting Sinister. And let me tell you something. This is why we love Jean Grey so much. When Sinister is like, I know you better than yourself, Jean. I know your weaknesses and your strengths. And he like punches Jean through the wall and he goes, and which, by the way, such Prue Halliwell vibes. I'm like, don't throw a telekinetic through the wall. Ah! Like traumatized. But when Sinister is like, if you ask nicely, I'll tell you when I switched you for Madeline. And Jean's like, it doesn't matter. Today, Madeline fights with me. Oh, so perfect. So perfect. Jean doesn't even want an answer. Jean does not even want an answer of when they were switched out, because it doesn't matter. Because Madeline, for all intents and purposes, is her sister. And this is something I've said over and over again when it's been Jean versus Maddie. I hate that. There is room at the table for both characters, and this showcases why. Now, I know Maddie died in Genosha, but I hope she comes back. It's comic books. It's a fantasy world. I hope they bring her back, and I want Nate Gray to bring her back. I know a lot of you disagree with that, but that showdown with Sinister was extremely powerful. I'm really, really happy with it. So, you know, this is an adaptation of Operation Zero Tolerance and Fatal Attractions, and it wouldn't be Fatal Attractions unless we got two things. One, Xavier shutting down Magneto's mind, and two, Magneto ripping out Wolverine's adamantium skeleton. Now, the former was interrupted because the X-Men had to divide between Blue Team and Gold Team, and Blue Team went to go reason with Magneto, and Gold Team went to go stop Bastion. And because Gold Team wasn't ready yet that Jean was fighting Cable, she telepathically reaches out to Cyclops, and Cyclops sees that her and Nathan are fighting each other, and it doesn't look like our God Queen was winning, and she goes, I love you. And I'm like, her goodbye. I don't believe she's dead. Does anyone believe Jean Grey is dead? Do not believe it. But Cyclops then hits Xavier as he's shutting down Magneto's mind. And he's here like, no, sorry, Gold Team needs a little bit more time, right? Because they can't repower Earth, because then the Prime Sentinels will come online. So they need to solve the Prime Sentinels first before Magneto restores power to the Earth. So Wolverine sees this as an opportunity and stabs Magneto. And Magneto's like, oh, finally, we can end this feud, and rips out the adamantium from Wolverine. Now, here are my two thoughts. One, I think Wolverine, the way he did it, this was a mercy kill for Wolverine. Wolverine said, I've been in a lot of wars. It's always the brave that die first. Wolverine understands where Magneto's coming from, but there's too much at stake. You cannot obliterate the planet. And secondly, a lot of people have been like, oh, Wolverine's been in the background. And the second they did Fatal Attractions, the second we saw that they were doing Fatal Attractions, I was like, we're getting Feral Wolverine. I hope that's where this is going towards. And we'll see next episode the status of it. Fatal Attractions is an iconic storyline. I think they got the gist of it. I think meshing Zero Tolerance and Fatal Attractions was absolutely genius. So genius. But what I think is also really good about this episode is the relationship between Xavier and Magneto. There's a lot of love here. There's a lot of complicated feelings between the two, right? They have a difference in ideology. They have both tried to see each other's perspective. They don't want each other to be acting a certain way. It is really, really complicated. And when Xavier was like, come on, Magnus, like, what are you doing? The world, you know, for someone who, you know, wants to rule the world, I'm forgetting his quote, but when he was here, like, you are letting the world monopolize you and your point of view. For someone who's saying that he's above all this, you're actually really susceptible. And Magneto's like, oh, just shut up. I mean, this is a complicated friendship. And if he's going to go into Xavier, if Xavier's going to go into Magneto's mind and shut it down, and we know the major consequence of this is Onslaught, then I really want to see how heartbreaking it is for Xavier to come to this decision. Again, I think the reunion between Xavier and all these characters, from Magneto to Jean and Cyclops, is a bit non-existent here, but I get it. I mean, I guess he's only been gone for less than a year. Oh my God, the shade he threw. He's here like, while you were in space with your bird queen. I was like, ah, Magneto, you're not pulling any punches. So let's see. This is a penultimate episode. Let's see where we're going to end next week. Familia, the scene of Magneto being stabbed by Wolverine, the claws coming out and the blood, and him saying, been in a lot of wars, but perfect. It's perfect. This is a near perfect adaptation of Fatal Attractions. Like, obviously, it's not a panel for panel, right? There are some panels that they are inspired this episode. We'll put those on the Instagram, specifically the last shot with Wolverine's adamantium that is ripped right out of the comics. But they streamlined very complicated stories. I mean, and the original Fatal Attraction storyline is pretty dark. I mean, it opens up with the Acolytes going to a hospice and murdering a bunch of humans. Like, it's a very dark story, but Fatal Attractions and Zero Tolerance, I think, makes sense to have them joint together here. I'm so incredibly happy with this series. I want to see what are the X-Men going to look like in the next episode. So much happened in this episode. There was a lot of character building and a lot of character moments, but a lot of it was set up for the finale. Let's see where things are going to go. But Familia, that is our breakdown, spoiler review of episode 9 of X-Men 97. Such great moments. Oh, the scenes between Storm and Jean, especially on the Blackbird, right before they go to battle the Sentinels. And she's here like, I just think it's so beautiful how Storm was saying that when she was going through her things, she thought of Jean and how in her darkest moment, she was able to rise like a phoenix, and that Storm used that as her own like inner strength. Oh my God. Oh my God. I mean, I just love the sisterly relationship. And when Jean's like, make them mind your weather, sister. And then Storm just looks at her and says, and them weather your mind. Perfect. Absolutely perfect. Anyways, Familia, slide into our DMs. Let us know what you think. I'll pull every Easter egg I see and post it on the Instagram page, as I always do, with time. We won't put necessarily all of them today, but starting tomorrow, we will. But let us know your thoughts on this episode. Slide into our DMs. Follow us on Power of X-Men, and we will catch you guys later.